Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Babu Yufawitu Jamalon, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speed race cars. That, by the way, is Arabic for "the door is big enough for a camel." No pithy response, Danny O'Dwyer?
No, I'm just sitting here enjoying the silence of no frogs. And I hope all of our listeners and viewers over on our YouTube channel are enjoying it too. It's a great, I don't know a door that's big enough to keep out frogs, but my ears right now are definitely doing the job.
Well, it's an idiomatic expression meaning no one is keeping you here. I guess the implication being that even if you arrived on a camel, the door is still big enough for you to leave. A similar phrase was said about Max Verstappen this week, which we'll get into. What'd you say, Rob?
Hit the bricks. If it sucks, just leave.
What is it about them using camels and idiomatic expressions for like going through things? You know what I mean? Eyes and needles, doors. Yeah, they're pretty big. Is that what you're saying?
I guess. I've never
rich man in heaven, camel with a needle. Yeah, it's true.
I've only met, I think it was an alpaca. Maybe a llama.
Was there ever camels? You know, they did a lot of cigarette advertising in F1. Did they ever have the camel on a thing?
Oh, absolutely. I can almost picture the camel on the side of an F1 car.
I can imagine on the side of like a NASCAR. Like that feels right at home. But
does he have a name? If only
Joe,
we could have had like a camel mascot the way Firehawk is hanging out at IndyCar races, but like a camel, but like a two-person camel suit.
Firehawk.
They got like the camel's got to be celebrating the race win with you. That would be great.
I feel like Joe Camel and Chester Cheetah are related.
Yeah, they're both like sort of scuzzy. They're both like kind of like people you'd meet at a motel and like drink with maybe one night, but like, you know, that's about it. Then you got to let they're just too hardcore.
Well, that's Danny O'Dwyer and Rob Zachney. I'm Drew Scanlon, and if you are new to this podcast, a very warm welcome to you. And if you're new to Formula One itself, we recommend listening to our preseason primer episode, which assumes no prior F1 knowledge and explains how the sport works and who everybody is. So if you'd like to go back and listen to that and get up to speed, it's episode 257. Yeah, I never used that one before. Also, the show would not be possible without our audience over at patreon.com/shiftf1. Where we release an ad-free version of the podcast, along with every month some bonus podcasts and videos exclusively for our patrons that cover racing documentaries and films, F1 video games, experiments with other racing series, and a lot of weird things. So if you'd like to support the show and get access to all that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1 or click the link in the show notes. What do we have going on this month, Danny?
Drive to Survive, episode 1-5, will be up this weekend. So for folks who want to have a little bit of action this weekend with no F1, you can listen to our review of the first 5 episodes of the 6th season of Drive to Survive. And then we'll be following that up early next month with Drive to Survive season 6, episodes 6-10, which we are recording tomorrow. We had lots of stuff to say about them. This has been an interesting, series, a lot of the episodes more interesting than others, but there's a couple of real good bangers in there. And in general, it seems like they've gotten their storytelling shoes on, which is pretty cool. Massive thank you, of course, to all of our incredible title sponsors as well over at patreon.com/shiftf1. We've Get Rich or Die Ryan, Agave ATX, Cyphus Training, Turf SES, At Team Blackjack, Michael Maves, Gordy's Army, At Talking Autos, Olivia Evans, TelemetryDeck.com, FTC, Drew Stewart, Bailey Foot, Abdullah Althani, MasterCard Vemo, JC Racing F1 Team, Abraham Getchell, The Space Above Us Podcast, Bunny Crimes Appreciates the 14 Hours of Sleep, Sniggs, Alex Goucher, Max Faltar, Circuit Demon, Troy Stammer, William Rompf, Irvine Clinical Research, Lachlan the Maddened Man, and of course, Jason Kelly. Thank you all so much for your incredible support, and thank you to most of you, looking at you, MasterCard, Venmo, JC Racing F1 Team, for shortening your names this week. Also, Bunny Crimes.
Sounds like Bunny Crimes is not in the daylight savings zone.
Yeah, exactly. I am, which is why the frogs are not here. So yes, we better wrap this podcast up quick, or else it's going to be fucking Kermit Frosty City over here by the time we're racing around the world.
All right, well, let's get to it then. The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix grid looks like this. What do you know? Our good friend Max Verstappen, pole position. What is that? 0.3 ahead of Charles Leclerc in second place. His Verstappen's teammate, Sergio Perez, in third, followed by Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin in fourth. And we've got the McLarens of Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris in fifth and sixth, followed by George Russell and Lewis Hamilton in seventh and eighth. And then Yuki Tsunoda 9th and Lance Stroll in 10th. The other Ferrari, not Carlos Sainz. In fact, Carlos Sainz went out after free practice 2 with appendicitis. And so with less than 3 hours notice, the youngest driver ever to drive for Ferrari, Oliver Bearman, half bear, half man, half Ferrari, got in the car in free practice 3. And then, with less than an hour in the car, went and qualified 11th. Only missed out on Q3 by 0.03 of a second. Would have knocked out Lewis Hamilton. Unbelievable. And just the beginning of a really exciting weekend for him.
Yeah, not since Liam Lawson have we seen a rookie come in and do such a great job in quali. Hopefully he has a better chance of getting on the grid than Liam did subsequent to that, but who knows, it's early in silly season.
Quick thing, just I thought the qualifying was once again kind of boring, and I feel like the traffic stacking up issue, like the 3-round qualifying, what they're doing, the show they're trying to put on, man, it just isn't working. Like, it is, especially in the early rounds, it is like watching 20 drivers try to plan their commute rather than seeing like an actual session. You know, like there's the, like, you don't want to go too early because then you could you catch like peak rush hour and actually you've got it wrong. But there's that like little window, right? Like if you leave it late, that most people have already, it feels like that, where it's just everyone is stacked up. It doesn't feel like we're getting necessarily like, oh wow, look at these cars, like on the absolute limit, just these things being, they're driving the wheels off these things. It really feels like drivers are searching for air out there and then getting in each other's way. And I don't know, it's like F1's trying to improve the show on so many fronts with, like, you know, different race formats, different qualifying formats, but I've liked the 3-round qualifying for a while, but with the issue with people like fighting for clean air and just a long, like, traffic backups in the pit lane, I think they need to reconsider this because it's awful.
Yeah, the competitiveness doesn't help either. If you remember, it was Jeddah where we had, like, arguably one of the most dramatic final lap pushes ever with Max and that crazy, insane lap he did. And only to just on the limit right until that last turn, you know. And now you kind of feel like he's pacing himself a little bit and still getting 0.3 up on everyone else.
Yeah. Well, let me finish out the grid here. Alex Albon lines up 12th, followed by Kevin Magnussen, Daniel Ricciardo. Nico Hülkenberg had a loss of power in Q2 and set no time.
Good job by K-Mag, though. You know, they were good here last year as well, though. So, you know, Haas just likes this track, I think.
Valtteri Bottas, 16th, followed by Esteban Ocon, Pierre Gasly, then Logan Sargeant, and Zhou Guanyu, who crashed in free practice 3, so his team frantically rebuilt the car. They did get out before the end of Q1, but he couldn't make it around in time, which is a bummer. But he starts from the back of the grid. And speaking of the start, Danny, do you want to take us through it?
Sure, yeah. Immediately I was like, oh, Lando jumped. The lights hadn't gone out yet, and it looked like Norris had jump started and then done the... I thought it was worse. I was like, oh no, is he like, you know, is this like old school anti-stall type stuff? But he managed to get it going pretty much right away. Subsequently, I guess they ruled that it wasn't a jump start. I'm guessing because he didn't breach the box he was in. Is that what it was?
So I've got a quote here from the stewards in an Autosport article saying, Article 48.1A of the Formula One sporting regulations, as we all know, states clearly that the judgment of whether or not there was a jump start is to be made in accordance with the transponder, which did not show a jump start. So this is the little sensor in the car, and I assume there are receivers in the pavement to let them know whether they move enough. In the circumstances, we took no further action.
Yeah, I wonder. Do those transponders also do the sort of Olympics athletics stuff of if you? It's not if you jump before the gun; it's if you jump within, like, the human reaction time of the gun, right?
Yes. So that I remember came into play. Valtteri Bottas 1 year, like,
you're right.
He did like the bare minimum. He was like point two zero seconds. He nailed it to the like thousandth of a second. Otherwise, it would have been inhuman. But so he escaped that. Norris was he missed a penalty there. He did come to a stop. Was moving when the lights went out, but then came to a stop once they were out, and then went again. So
yeah.
But that apparently did not factor into the steward's decision.
And didn't throw off anyone else, which can often happen as well. He was good to go. And I think there's an interesting A-B test here with Red Bulls, where basically Verstappen goes ahead here. Then you have Leclerc, who's in P2, and Perez, who's in P3. And as they go down to that first turn, Perez is neck and neck with him. He's on the outside. They make the turn. And then as they're approaching, sort of getting out of that, you know, faux chicane towards turn three, Perez leaves enough space for Leclerc to continue to fight alongside him. And then by the time they get down to that left-hander after that brief straight, Leclerc has gotten the position back. There was a great bit in the green room after the race where they were watching the start of the race. And Leclerc said, "You were very fair. You left enough speed there. You left enough space there for me." And Perez smiled and went, "I always leave the space." which I was laughing, thinking, Verstappen does not leave the space. And Verstappen has a world championship.
Sergio, also famous for leaving the space.
Yes, very good point. Also not necessarily true. So that's how that shook out. But it did remind me of, it reminded me of two things. It was one, Verstappen never leaves that gap. And also, the Red Bulls know they're going to get these cars. Like, they're not scrambling for position on turn three. They're not idiots. It's going to be a long race, and that car is fast, man.
Yeah. I enjoyed that back and forth on that opening lap between Perez and Leclerc. But if I'm honest, the only one I was watching was Behrman, seeing how he did in the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And you get, like, it's like the cameras weren't sure whether he was going to be something interesting to watch for a little bit. So you're just trying to, like, that first lap, you're like getting little snippets here and there. It's the one time that I, or I guess most recently, have wanted to do the, like, multi-screen F1 setup where you've got, like, an onboard over here and the data screen over here and the live feed here. And in fact, I heard about, this is probably the strongest use case for an Apple Vision Pro that I've ever heard,
or
probably the only real use case that I've ever heard, which is because the fidelity is so good, you can basically do that with virtual screens. And in fact, someone, a big fan of VR that I work with, sent me this app, and I'll include a link in the show notes because it looks pretty cool. Behrman was looking great before even lap two begins, though. Gasly retires with a gearbox problem. But then, thankfully, we go right back to the action. Behrman attacking Tsunoda, sending it up into turn one, has to back out to avoid contact. But already, like, I can't believe, I was nervous for him, and I can't believe that he was able to make moves like that. I just, these guys are made of different stuff.
It was also great. The director of the show was also doing a great job of constantly cutting back to his absolutely terrified looking father, who was also flagged by Carlos Sainz Sr. And then later I realized Carlos Sainz as well. And also, what's his face? The guy who, like, basically runs the parent company that owns Ferrari.
John Elkann.
Yeah, Elkann was there as well. He was in the background as well.
So the whole crew was there. But yes, it was good. We love a bit of that. We love a bit of parents' reaction or spouse's reaction or whatever it is. And we got plenty of that in this race.
Yeah, if I didn't mention, he's 18 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, he was
now
preparing
the minimum.
And he, right, and he was his youngest rookie in a Ferrari in like 40 something years or something.
Oh, well, ever.
Crazy.
I think the youngest.
Oh, is it ever? Okay.
Ever youngest Ferrari driver ever to start a race.
And he was meant to drive. He was waking up to drive in the Formula 2 race. Right. Like, so he was like,
he
was on pole for. Exactly. Yeah. So in a way, he had a very, very different, different race to look forward to.
Yes. Meanwhile, Piastri gets by Alonso, for fourth place, just ahead of that battle, between, Bearman and Tsunoda. And lap four, Perez gets by Leclerc finally. After four laps, he just bides his time. into second place at turn one. And that's kind of that. Danny, you kind of you gave it away with your green room lineup. But that's how that ended. On lap six, we're on a helicopter shot of Bearman chasing Tsunoda still going into turn 22, that sort of left-right complex. When suddenly up ahead, Stroll looks like he's just cutting the corner and then plows straight into the barriers.
Yeah, on replay, they showed he basically turned in a little bit too early on that right-hander, broke the front left suspension, and then was a passenger. One of my favorite pieces of team radio we've had this year, which is the guy saying, I've hit the wall. His engineer saying, can you drive it back? And Stroll going, no, I'm in the wall.
Yeah. Something he did, the same thing in free practice one, Stroll did.
Hit that inside wall.
Yeah, that same one. So we get a safety car for that. Everybody pits except for Norris, who inherits the lead, and then Hamilton, Hülkenberg, and Zhou.
They're banking on another safety car.
Yeah, because this is early for the hard tires. So these other drivers stay on their mediums and then are hoping either for another safety car or to, I guess, then go on to soft tires. Perez, though, during his pit stop, exits his pit box into the path of Alonso, earning himself a 5-second penalty and one penalty point on his license. The light was red for him.
Oh, was it really?
Yes, okay. And he said after the race, I saw that I didn't have the proper release, but I didn't see anyone coming. Sometimes the teams can be a little bit slower than you in the car, but this time it was the other way around, so my bad on that one.
My bad.
Just trusted the famously good mirrors of an F1 car.
Yeah.
It's got worse blind spots than less a fucking good than truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you are new to the penalty points system, these are points that expire after one calendar year from the time that you earn them. And if you accrue, I believe 12 of them, then you have to sit out a race.
Right.
He has 8 penalty points and will have them for the next 15 rounds. So we get a restart on lap 10. Piastri challenging Leclerc for net fourth, but Leclerc stays ahead. Then we go back a little bit in the field to Albon racing Magnussen for 13th, who then Albon gets squeezed nearly into the wall. And in fact, he and Magnussen's tires touch and Magnussen's twisted a little bit, but thankfully for him, retains control of the car. This, though, earns Magnussen a 10-second penalty. And it's not the only one.
A taste of things to come for Magnussen blocking people.
Lap 11, Bearman finally does get by Tsunoda with a cutback along the straight into the inside of turn one. Seems to be having zero problems handling an F1 car. In fact, Fred Vasseur said after the race that he drove like a veteran. And it looked like it. Mm. I initially was very nervous for him, but the more the race went on, I was like, all right, this guy can just, he can do it. So lap 13, we've got Verstappen taking his time, passing Norris, but it finally does happen on this lap on the start-finish straight. And into the same corner, Perez gets by Hamilton into third. Hamilton also did not stop for tires. And a few laps later, Leclerc gets by Hamilton around the outside of turn one for fifth. Lap 21, Bearman still getting it done, passing Hulkenberg on the start-finish straight with DRS for ninth place into the points. But as you mentioned, Danny, Magnussen, lap 23, not done breaking the rules. Passing Tsunoda by driving up the inside of a corner and then leaving the track. Which is a terrifying onboard, because the way that this corner works is you're going down a straight and then it's a left turn, but first the wall bulges out into the track. So because Magnussen is passing on the inside, it looks like he's driving straight at a wall. Thankfully, you know, either Tsunoda backs out or Magnussen gets ahead and he can kind of go around. He can't make the turn and goes off and thus earns himself another 10-second penalty. But yeah, it's a real clenchy moment looking at that onboard.
It won't be the only time he does it on turn one. And this isn't just madness. What he's doing is trying as much as possible to help out his boy in front, because Hulkenberg is a couple places ahead of him. And these Haases, I mean, they're not that competitive, but on a track like Singapore, where it's tough to overtake, if he does his sort of best fight, defend like a lion, maybe he can help the team out. Yeah, for sure.
So effectively what he's done is he got by Tsunoda illegally, but he's going to stay up there and back everybody up because he doesn't want them to chase down Hulkenberg and knock him out of the points.
It's amazing.
RB, Tsunoda's team, was pretty upset with this tactic after the race, as you can maybe imagine. I believe they said that they're going to issue a formal complaint to the FIA, so we'll see if anything comes of that. Lap 33, Albon, long bomb down at turn one on Tsunoda for 14th. The other thing here is that Ocon, with this Magnussen move, got by Tsunoda because Tsunoda lost some momentum there. So
yes,
understandable why RB is so mad.
Well, it's very funny because they're all fighting with each other and probably not helping each other's tires, because Magnussen's boxed them all up, but they're effectively fighting for 13th position. So they're wasting a lot of energy and tires, and it's all for nothing, really. I mean, I'll be honest though, most entertaining thing that happened in the second half of this race. So
that's the problem. I was like, I think toward the end, I turned to MK and I was like, is it bad that the most like exciting thing we were all talking about was Magnussen defending the mid pack so that Hulkenberg could pit?
So that Hulkenberg could get 1 point?
Yeah, like, not.
Hey, it's Haas, man. They need it.
The Ocon thing, did that happen on the illegal overtake, or was it when Yuki almost took the position back and was running side by side through one?
Okay. It was then.
Yeah, so he had a failed overtake.
It was like 29, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and then left the door open for Esteban. And I think that's the kind of the other thing, is like, not a great performance from Yuki there, both in terms of, like, I suspect the lesson is going to be learned. Maybe new generations have to relearn the lesson with Magnussen. Every time is like, you do not give that man an inch. Yuki maybe should have like made him choose between the wall or dropping back with that initial overtake. Because once Magnussen gets ahead of you, you're done. Your day just is shot. It's going to be the worst. You can't get by him.
In many ways, I think this was sort of the flip side, the yin to the yang of Hulkenberg's you're the least sporting driver on the grid. You know what I mean? This was this time around.
He sure is,
Yuki,
Nico.
Asking him.
He sure is.
Exactly. Yeah, it worked out. Yuki should have been asking him to, suck my balls, mate.
Lap 42, Joe finally comes in for his pit stop, but we get another bad Sauber pit stop. Joe was on course to finish 11th, according to Autosport, but the pit stop lasted for a full 25 seconds. And we have some quotes here from team representatives. Mr. Alessandro Aluni Bravi, quote, "We know that we have a problem. We have an issue that has been the same in Bahrain on Valtteri's car and this time on Joe's car. We are revising the parts in order to not have this problem again in the next races." And here's the racing director, Jevi Pujalar, quote, "It's nothing wrong with the crew, with mechanics. They are doing, I would say, a reasonable job."
Fucking cheers, mate. vote of confidence that is. Reasonable job.
We are causing a cross thread, and it takes time because we have to change the wheel nut. So that's what happened again there.
Valtteri Bottas' great-great-grandmother accidentally cross-threaded a bolt on a witch's house, and it's just been following his family for generations. He can't get away if he swaps team. He just comes with him.
People in the Shift F1 Discord also pointed out that it was Bottas many years ago when he was at Williams that they put different compounds of tires on his car.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, he fucking some tire witch. Back, she used to make wheels for wagons or something, and they just they stole her off her land. Or yeah, just it's just following him, man. It's terrible.
Last thing I have here is that lap 48, Ricardo has a spin, and I just have in all caps, don't do this to me, Ricardo.
I know. Yeah.
He also did not have a great qualifying. And you kind of hate to hear quotes like this. I was confident going into qualifying, and I was feeling quite good in the car, but on the second run, I made a mistake. We were still in the fight. Everyone was improving their lap time, but I felt like I couldn't get any more out of what I had, and we just plateaued. It wasn't a matter of oversteer or understeer, but more that I didn't have the grip compared to the others. I knew there was more time on the table. Today was a little bit of a mystery.
Mm.
So...
telling you, man, Yuki, once Yuki and Pierre, it was just like Yuki learned a lot, and now Yuki is just a nightmare. No one can.
Another career to end every year. Yeah. He's got to put another silhouette on the fuselage of his.
Tsunoda's never going to get that second Red Bull seat, but he's going to make sure none of his teammates do either.
He is the Max Verstappen of RB.
He is now. Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, like Ricardo, not very memorable in this race. Kind of forgot he was there. Again, that V carb doesn't seem good. Doesn't seem like a good car. The fact that Yuki can never do anything about the Haas isn't an amazing sign, or do anything about the Alpine once it was past him.
That's true.
But it's kind of weird. Like nobody could overtake in this race. Piastri just like. It was exciting for a while. We were like, man, maybe this time Piastri is going to do it. And it just turns into one of those things that we see a lot in current modern F1 where it's like, this overtake's never happening.
Nobody except Oliver Bearman, who finished this race. Well, I'll get to it. Max Verstappen wins. Sergio Perez second. Charles Leclerc third. Oscar Piastri comes home fourth, followed by Fernando Alonso in fifth. Then George Russell, Oliver Bearman in seventh. Nice. Said that Hamilton basically had to pull him out of the car because he was so exhausted.
Oh, my God.
Lando Norris in eighth, Lewis Hamilton ninth, and Nico Hülkenberg last of the points, paying positions. That underhand tactic by Magnussen paying off. Just out of the points, we've got Alex Albon, Kevin Magnussen, Esteban Ocon, Logan Sargeant, Yuki Tsunoda 15th. Then Daniel Ricciardo, Valtteri Bottas, Zhou Guan Yu, and the DNFs of Lance Stroll and Pierre Gasly. Leclerc scored the additional point for fastest lap of the race.
On the last lap. Yeah.
And that is the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, everyone.
13 seconds between Max and Checo, and then another five or so behind. But he was...
it's not 20.
Eked it out. Probably could have been if he wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right. Well, that is it for the race recap. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with the news. And boy, the news fountain keeps giving us that elixir of life.
Mm, yes.
Rob, please update us.
Yeah. So, God, it's been a hell of a week for Red Bull for this story. I think the first thing that happened in between the races was we got word that Red Bull suspended Christian Horner's accuser, which is just a great headline that you want if you're Red Bull. That is nothing says nobody did anything wrong than the punitive suspension follow up shortly thereafter. Maybe this is a prelude to legal action, and with things moving toward a court. toward court. The person can't be fired, but also can't be at work. Who knows? Mm. But just a toxic headline that just indicate, you know, certainly is going to read like we sided with the boss, and now it's time for retribution against an accuser. And then in this one, my feeling is that in wrestling terms, this was a work that Helmut Marko wanted to, like, you know, toss some straws in the wind and force some commitments from Red Bull to him. Because early in the race weekend, there were headlines going around that Helmut Marko was telling reporters I may have committed some light treason type thing, where he was like, they're investigating, Red Bull is investigating Horner and may suspend him for the many, many leaks of details about the investigation of Christian Horner. And which further was sort of grist for the mill that, like, a lot of this and a lot of the weirdness about the way it is handled is because this has turned into a front in a Red Bull civil war between Helmut Marko and Christian Horner. And so this kind of, you know, Marko talking about this sort of gives the impression that Horner's now coming for his head. And that triggers things like Max Verstappen doing what he declined to do for Horner, giving the big vote of confidence to Helmut Marko, saying that, you know, he's a pillar of Max's success at the team, and Helmut not being at Red Bull would not be good for his relationship with the team or his feeling that that's where his future is. In all of this, you know, Toto Wolff has been making intimations that he'd love to have Max come be a Mercedes driver in hell. Why not Helmut Marko as well? It occurred to me in all of this that honestly the one thing Mercedes probably could do, because they can't compete with Red Bull right now. They don't have a car that can do so. They don't appear to be on path to getting one. But if you make big overtures at getting Max and you succeed in breaking up that team, whether or not you get Max would probably be the best thing for Mercedes, is to have Max and Jos and Helmut all start to bust up the team, while Christian's desperately trying to hold on to his position. So anyway, later in the weekend, Helmut Marko says he spoke to the Red Bull CEO, and you know they're not getting rid of him. They're committed to him there, which feels like the entire
to Marko
thing. That feels like the thing Marko was fishing around for from the start by saying like they might suspend me, was to get a big vote of confidence both from Max and now the CEO. So his position is pretty unassailable there. Which is why you're hearing Horner talk about things like there's no strife at the top. There's no battle happening here. After the weekend, Horner was out there saying that they're sort of a unified front. That there's not a civil war happening despite all the evidence to the contrary. Also over this weekend, they were making clear that Red Bull is not in a position to and will not force Max to stay if he reaches the conclusion he needs to change teams. So we have that as well. But yeah, it's like it continues to be a weird and ugly like political knife fight over there. It's a huge... You always hear this term in the NFL, like things are a distraction. And usually that means something like a player expressed an opinion about racial equality in America, and it's like you can't have that in the locker room. This actually does feel like a distraction. This does feel like there's a fridge full of rotting fish in the Red Bull garage, and everything just keeps coming back to that.
Yeah, stuff like this.
The on-track action is meaningless. It's not interesting.
That's a good point. That is, I actually do think that factors into it too. I think if they are in a legitimate fight, you can sort of rally the troops a little bit. But because it seems like such a foregone conclusion, I think that doesn't necessarily, create act as much of an emotional binding agent. But I think like the thing we're running into here is that like everyone seems to be a little bit uncomfortable or a lot bit uncomfortable. Obviously, Max, who hates doing any of this sort of stuff, was even pressed into talking to the media on the first day about how much Helmut was important to him and how, you know, we're very loyal to Helmut and XYZ. And like to your point, Christian Horner was also out there saying like, you know, we love Max, but yes, you know, we have other prospects and blah, 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 blah. And like, it's a team effort. He was talking a lot about like, it's not just the driver, it's also the car and the team and all this. A lot of scuttlebutt apparently in the Red Bull pit in general, and also at the factory, that the suspension of that accuser has also rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way internally over there. So you're just creating all of these. I mean, also, who knows? Maybe there was a lot of discontent prior to this story and we weren't aware of it. We didn't have a window into it. But you're starting all these little tiny fires, and like stuff like this does not go away. Like stuff like this, resentments and worries that somebody's behind you looking for your job. This stuff never ends in like a we're all okay. And if there's 5 of them going on or 10 of them going on, or there's all these different issues going on at the same time, there's only one route, and it's some sort of exit or you know, the entropic forces are pushing this towards something happening, not something not happening. So when you have, you know, Corner saying like, oh, there's nothing going wrong, and you know, everyone saying, oh, Helmut, we're with you, and all this, it's all just, you can feel the platitudes, you know what I mean? It's, I don't know how this is going to end up, but like, I'm sure it's not going to end up with all of them happy families by the time this time next year. Especially with Joss. I mean, Joss is the one who was out there saying, that motherfucker's got to go. You know what I mean? He just came out and said it. And he was like, I'm not coming to the next 4 races, everyone, but don't worry about it. Best of luck.
Which fascinates me to no end, because I got to believe it's not just because of what's in the press.
Right, yeah.
Like, why is Joss doing that? That's what I'm curious about. What are those other ulterior motives there?
We must have a sliver of what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's... And again, like, so much of the stems goes back to, like, Red Bull fumbled this completely. If the intention was to fire him, then they shouldn't have done a show trial, like, you know... What's the term? Outside counsel investigation of the matter? Because if it clears him, as we've seen, it hasn't made a difference because we don't know what the accusations were. Nobody else can review the evidence. All you have is a company, a third party, paid by Red Bull to come in and say, like, we're clearing Horner of wrongdoing. And none of us know what that means. In the wake of that, now it's clear, and I think maybe that's the other part of like what's so frustrating and infuriating about this is it kind of feels like the thing that's gotten revealed in all this is that the accusations from the Red Bull perspective within that team, that was a pretext. There were people who were ready to make a play to get Horner out of there, and it was like, here's a handy weapon to draw. Let's go for it. And now that didn't work, who gives a shit? Forget the investigation. let's move on. And, you know, it's going to take its course, but it's kind of the thing that corrupts this from the start is that it some sort of, like, intra-team civil war was brewing. This accusation, you know, crops up in the middle of that, is immediately sort of used to try to, like, win that war. And when that fails... Now the entire thing is just sort of lingering in the background.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's no moving on from it. Like, no, everyone now knows they tried to fire Horner.
Yeah. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. This is a real, like, well, we had our shot. We did it. I do wonder if the accuser, if there will be a civil trial or an unfair dismissal case even against Red Bull. Like, there's... Maybe that's the cheaper alternative for them than, you know, what we talked about last week, which is the whole them offering Christian to walk away and then him saying, I'll, you know, reportedly, you know, allegedly that he would sue them if that was the case. Maybe it's the lesser of two evils from their perspective. Yeah. I don't know. To be continued. But yeah, looks like it stinks over there. It looks like they are having the least amount of fun with, you know, winning a lot of these races, probably. Yeah. Or just pretending they're enjoying it, or who knows.
Well, speaking of lingering legal cases, Danny.
Yes, exactly. Speaking of Felipe Massa, he's doing it. He's had enough.
My God.
He's like, you know what? 2008 might have been 16 years ago, but I remember it like yesterday when you stole my championship away from me by having somebody intentionally crash races before the final, right? Don't worry about that. Don't worry about the fact that I lost it on points anyway. It did nothing to do with it. If we did some sort of butterfly effect math, I would have been the champion.
Well, yeah, so to reset, he... So, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
do you want
sorry.
Me to reset this, or you want to...
I'll reset it. So there was a thing that happened back in 08 called Crashgate, which was basically in the Singapore Grand Prix, Nelson Piquet Jr. was told by his team to intentionally crash his car to help out his teammate Fernando Alonso to win that race. Famously, it was a massive case where multiple people were basically banned from F1, although not for life, for like 10 years and things like that. And what has happened in the years since is that there was an interview with Bernie Eccleston it was last year at some stage, in which he basically said that they knew about Crashgate during the season. The whole thing that happened, the whole case with it and all that happened way later in the year, and there wasn't roll back points.
Meaning Bernie, the head of F1, and Max Mosley, the head of the FIA.
Yes, they were aware of it, and they didn't do anything about it until afterwards. And when Massa found out about this, he was like, well, wait a second, had they known it was a fix, basically, with what Alonso's team had done, that then they would have struck it off the calendar, and then those points wouldn't have been allotted. And if those points wouldn't have been allotted, then Hamilton wouldn't have won as he did on the basically final turn, penultimate turn of the F1 calendar, and that he would have been champion. Now, again, this is... It's kind of ridiculous, because it's basically saying that like everything else would have happened the exact same, which of course wouldn't have been the case. Everyone would have had different strategies for trying to get points, yada, yada, yada. But he thinks he has a case. So we have some quotes here from the lawsuit that he has submitted. Mr. Massa is seeking declarations that the FIA breaches regulations by failing to promptly investigate Nelson Piquet Jr.'s crash at the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix, and that had it acted appropriately, Mr. Massa would have won the Drivers' Championship that year. Mr. Massa also seeks damages for the significant financial loss he has suffered due to the FIA's failure, in which Mr. Eccleston and FOM were also complicit. Attempts to find an amicable resolution have been unsuccessful, leaving Massa with no choice but to initiate legal proceedings. How do we think this one's going to go, guys? I think this is a bit of a road to nowhere and kind of makes him look like a bit of a sore loser weirdo.
I mean, no downside, though, aside from that.
Aside from that, save your reputation, I guess. I mean, he could get some money, but I don't know. Do they do damages?
From who? From, like, I guess Bernie? Like,
FOM.
He's suing the FIA and the FOM, but they're... None of those people are there anymore. I don't know how this legal stuff works.
But the organizations are contiguous. Like, you can still say, like, it was...
It's true.
Your executive botched it, but it's your company's job to handle this right.
Mm.
Yeah.
We will wait and see. Some more.
Well, speaking of big companies doing stuff, Rob, what's up with Audi?
So, now that, like, after weeks of, like... There being just complete radio silence from Audi about what's going on with their relationship with Sauber, because there were indications, like, apparently there's some reshuffling at the head of, like, the VW group, that the execs that were really bullish on motorsports and getting an F1 aren't there. And much more like, hey, we just want to sell consumer cars. Like, I don't want to run a billion-dollar racing program. Those people have sort of taken power. But apparently, like, Audi is confirmed now. Like, their ensuing takeover of Sauber I don't think they've moved it up. I think they're continuing to stand by the notion that like they're going to come in 2026. But you know, this is Audi signaling again. No, this is really happening. We've got a leadership team in place. You know, we promise we are taking over Sauber when the new regs hit.
I think, you know, you look at, I think one way one might look at this in sort of a knee-jerk way would be like, ah, Sauber, like, they're not doing so hot. Does Audi really want them? But then you look at, like, the hoops that Andretti is having to jump through and the brick wall that their wave is just crashing into. And this looks like a deal, right? Like, who cares about Sauber? All they want is that entry ticket, right? Like, this is an extremely valuable thing to do.
Buying a shitty team way cheaper than paying what I'm sure is going to be an eye-watering anti-dilution fee in the next Concorde agreement. Like, if Andretti's going to do this later, I suspect it's just going to be they're gonna pay that fee, whatever it is. And you know, Andretti's continued, just by the way, Andretti was like posting pictures or like was releasing photos of Andretti's umbrella company that handles all their motorsports ventures is building a new HQ around Indianapolis, and it's gonna house their Indy operation, their sports car operation, and then like 50% of the square footage is gonna be dedicated to their F1 operation.
Whoa.
Which, cool, hell yeah, like, excited for that. But if they're continuing to go down that road, kind of does seem like FOM read their man. And that, like, they're going to come in. And you don't have to let them come in for the $200 million anti-dilution fee. They will pay whatever it takes. So make them do it. Make them wait. It does not appear that getting in right now was the make or break for Andretti.
Well, we will all have to wait 2 weeks for the next Grand Prix in Australia. But until then, just wanted to do a PSA here. We didn't really know what the broadcast situation was going to be for F1 Academy. That's the all-female racing series that is part of the F1 ladder. This is the first year that they have really broadcast it live. It's the second year that it's happened. But in this season, every race will be adjoining an F1 weekend. And therefore, I think it makes it a lot easier for them to film it, to stream it. And we didn't really know how it was going to work. Now we do. It was all on YouTube. And so, at least in the U.S., you can, I don't know what geo-blocking is going on here. It always seems to rear its ugly head with Formula One stuff, or the racing in general. So youtube.com/F1Academy is the place to go. They have the full sessions. If you click on the live tab, they've streamed them there, and the full replays are there. They also have highlights for each session. So if you'd like to go and follow along there, I believe it's 8 rounds this season of 2 races each. And I think they do 1 qualifying session, which is interesting because there's 2 races. Your fastest lap is your time for race 1's grid, and your second fastest lap is what sets the grid for race 2. That was interesting. If you'd like to go back and watch that, it is available, and I'll put the link in the show notes. You can also keep yourself busy with the official Shift F1 Fantasy League. Before we get to that, let me run down the real F1 standings. Max Verstappen is on top with 51 points. Sergio Perez, his teammate, is in second with 36. Charles Leclerc has 28 in third. Then we've got George Russell in fourth with 18. Oscar Piastri in fifth with 16. Carlos Sainz, having not participated this weekend, is in sixth with 15 points. Then we've got a tie between Fernando Alonso and Lando Norris for seventh and eighth. Lewis Hamilton is in ninth with 8 points. And then Oliver Bearman is in 10th with 6 points, ahead of Nico Hülkenberg and Lance Stroll, both with 1 point. And the zeros of Albon, Zhou, Magnussen, Ricciardo, Ocon, Tsunoda, Sargeant, Bottas, and Gasly. Mm-hmm. In the constructor standings, we have Red Bull Racing on top with 87 points. Ferrari's in second with 49. And McLaren in third with 28. Mercedes has 26. Aston Martin's got 13. Gene Haas and team have 1. And everybody else has 0. Williams, Sauber, Arby, and Alpine. But on to our fantasy standings. In the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, the podium looks like this. In third, a boy made... take two. A boy named Sue. T-S-U.
Okay. Sure.
It's pretty good. In second place, V-Carb just kicked in, yo. And in first place, Max Verstappening 2. But the global points look like this. Oh, boy. Third place, Christian Horndog.
I'd eat one of those.
Boy, I wouldn't. They're probably really expensive at the concession stand. Second place, Beans Means Signs.
That's a Heinz baked beans commercial reference.
Well, there are Z's.
Beans Means Heinz. Beans Means Signs. Like it.
That's good. That's good.
And another reference.
And another reference.
That we can all get behind.
True enough, Danny. Number one, Latifi for my bunghole.
Good stuff, everyone.
Just brilliant. Everyone bringing their A game.
That's why we're here. That's why we're here. My team.
How you doing?
Was your team as bad as my team? Because,
well,
oh boy.
They're identical, as we learned.
Not anymore. So, I swapped out a lot of them.
Oh, did you?
I should have kept them the fucking same, buddy. Uh-oh. I had Verstappen, but then I had Stroll.
Oh. Well.
Tsunoda, Ricardo, and Albon.
Okay.
And I replaced RB with Kick Sauber.
Okay, well.
I'm not good at this, guys.
I scored 151 points in Saudi.
Cool. I actually can't even tell because this fucking website is an absolute
disaster. It's really, they keep redesigning it and it keeps being bad.
I got 112.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Ricardo Bulls, not doing too good. What's your team's called? Team called?
Welcome to Arby's.
Nice. Somebody else, maybe by accident or on purpose, there's like another like 22 person Shift F1 league on there. Don't join that one. Join the one.
What's ours called? I think it's
in the show notes. Ours is just called Shift F1 Podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got like 1,300 people in it.
Yeah. So. Join the big one. Yeah, you can send us an email also if you want to keep yourself busy. ShiftF1Podcast@gmail.com or f1.cool/emails. We got an email episode next week.
We do. Send them in.
Because it's the pre-Australia one. You can also hit us up on the socials using the links in the show notes. And now that we've gone around the internet, it's time to race around the world.
Let's race around the world. Yeah.
Danny and Rob, I might have a new favorite race venue name.
Oh, boy.
The Sao Paulo E-Prix, Formula E's E-Prix, is happening at the Anhembi Sambadrome.
Oh my God.
The Sambadrome.
The Sambadrome. My hips are already moving. I have a Brazilian friend who showed me recently. He was he knows that he lived in Europe for a little while, and he sent me a hilarious video of this like Brazilian samba band doing a cover of Sunday Bloody Sunday by U2.
Oh my God.
I was like, wait. You know, that's about an actual like event where, you know,
got a good beat though.
It's got exact. And I was like there, and it's just like Sunday Bloody Sunday. It's like, it's pretty good. You know,
how long do your fists go to the air?
Oh good, man. Stuff. Samba. Do you want to put that in the show notes?
Sure, I will, yeah.
Great. All right, we've also got the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, 12 hours of Sebring at the Sebring International Raceway in Sebring, Florida. Sebring.
It was a banger last year. Like, it ends in darkness, and so everything just goes
so does
bonkers.
Democracy.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got the Craftsman Trucks at the Bristol Motor Speedway for the WeatherGuard Truck Race. Really, we couldn't come up with a better name for the truck race than the truck race.
The truck race.
I mean,
the trucks are racing. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Then we got NASCAR. Are
we racing trucks?
Well, over in Bristol.
Mm.
Oh, I guess we're also racing cars in Bristol. NASCARs. They're not called NASCAR.
Is it the car race?
Called Star Cars. No, Danny, it's the Food City.
Oh, yeah.
500. Come on, town.
Kids. Come on, kids. We're going to Food City. Get your Christian horn dogs.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, final thoughts. Danny, second race of the season.
I was going to try and make a spice burger joke there, but then I realized none of you know what a spice burger is because it's a weird Irish thing. So I guess I won't be able
to. Is it like a sloppy Joe but with more whiskey?
To explain what this is going to take an inordinate amount of time. It is a food product that you would eat, like a fried fruit product. I think it's mostly made out of offal and bad parts, and then they just threw a bunch of spice on it. But and also the use of the word spice here is being used in a very Irish way, which does not communicate properly.
Spice burger sounds like a real pre-Celtic Tiger phenomenon.
Yes,
it sounds like a Hard Times in the Republic. Hard Times in the Free State, honestly.
Yeah, back when our bone density wasn't so good, you know, just back in the when everyone's eyesight was a bit weird. Yeah, I love a fucking spice burger, though. It's basically got no nutrients in it. I don't know. I'm optimist, right? And we do a podcast about Formula One, and we hear it, have a good time and talk about it. I'm flirting with the idea of becoming like a sort of an evil version of myself for the rest of this year, who's just like completely down on the Red Bull domination, just so when we eventually crest the wave. Because it's going to happen. Because if you followed F1 long enough, you know, right? There's every dynasty falls, right? So that when that happens, it'll feel even better. It's almost like just like, you know, it's like no, not November, but it's like no, enjoy F1 year. And then at the end, it's gonna feel so good, man. It's gonna feel so good.
That certainly is an approach. Rob Zachney, final thoughts.
Join me, Rob.
But I feel like it could be like there would be no nutting until possibly the new regulations kick in. Like, that seems a hard way to watch F1 for currently an indefinite period of time. But I'm with you. Like, I don't like how, once again, it feels like we are two races into the longest seasons in F1 history.
Right.
And the product is not good. They are serving more of a product that is not generating a lot of interesting action. And this year, there's not even a ton of interesting action so far. Dan, you called it out early. Like, does it seem like overtaking is struggling to happen a little bit? Like, we were sort of on top of that issue this last year, but like, has it somehow gotten harder? So yeah, I'm like, as someone who has to talk about F1 for like, you know, 90 minutes every week thereabouts, I like there to be lots of interesting things to talk about that are not Christian Horndog. But we've sort of found ourselves in a situation where, like, 2 weeks in, people are like, well, pack it in. This car has fundamental flaws. Already heard that from Mercedes. The new car, fundamentally flawed. Awesome. Can we do anything about it? No, we'll just try to develop a better car for next year. Because with the budget cap, don't throw good money after bad.
Bad money, yeah. I you know, anecdotally, a couple of friends of mine who watch F1, you know, I wouldn't say, I'd say more, like, they're pretty good at watching the races, but, like, you know, more than watching highlights. Like, they're not mega fans, but they definitely, like, sit down and watch it. Two separate people both said that they're basically just like, I'm gonna give it a few months, you know, I'll come back in a few months and see if it's a bit interesting. So I do wonder if alarm bells start going to go off, you know.
Tell you, didn't feel great when MK was like, I like Saturday races because you can get the F1 out of the way.
oh boy. Yeah. But we're here. You're here, listener, right? You're with us, right? We're going to get through this together because it's going to feel so good on the other side. And also, I mean, look, interesting stuff always happens.
Well, you know? Frankly, our cup is running over with news to talk about.
That's
frankly
true.
Like, but this is why we love F1, right? Like, There is always something weird going on.
This is the most F1 thing could ever happen. Like, I think once I was like, you kind of watch for half the politics, and the politics are uglier. Like, this is an uglier story than we're used to seeing. It's not just rich egos clashing, though there's a healthy dollop of that. But at the same time, like, I've never seen Dynasty just like set itself on fire this way. Like, when everyone's winning, that's when people are happy. Success papers over all differences. And not this time. Not this time.
Do you know what the other thing is as well, is that this year we know we're going to get the sort of, you know, lemon dance. We're gonna get everyone going to different silly season's gonna basically run amok eventually. It's gonna happen. We don't know when it's gonna sort of kick in, but you know, chances are sometime around the summertime. And right now, at least, it's kind of hard to tell where the momentum is anywhere. And also the fact that 2026 is coming around. So it's just going to be really interesting and weird, because like, there's no sure bets. It's not like everyone's like, oh, I got it. Well, I mean, Red Bull feels good, but like, does it now? I don't know. Or I got to go to Mercedes because they're going to get the jump. And I don't know. Like, are McLaren going to be good? Or, you know, Sauber going to be suddenly really good once this deal happens?
Red Bull's cleaning up in an era where the engine development is frozen. Like,
right.
If you want to talk about a thing that doesn't bode well for, you know, the durability of the dynasty, it's like, of the three legs of the F1 stool, right? Like, one of them's been sawed off for competition purposes. Like, it's just not, you can't do engine dev. Once you have to, like, do all three things and get them back in harmony, I don't know. 2026 could be real interesting with all the shifts. And it does sort of feel like we're in pre-positioning phase, with people just moving the pieces around the board. Hamilton going over there. Boy, Hamilton bailing on Mercedes, starting to look like, you probably read that right.
Man, well, time will tell, as always. And if you'd like to support the show, as always, you can get access to our bonus episodes, the ad-free version of the podcast, and the official Shift F1 Discord. The meme channel has really, honestly been one of the best parts of this year so far. So if you'd like to have access to that, you can do so over at patreon.com/shiftf1. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.